three angels' messages and worship. The three angels' messages began to sound in 1844. At that time, Darwin was getting into focus the teachings on evolution. The Industrial Revolution was shaking the whole social structure of the civilized world. Things were in flux, moving, rushing. Few knew where. Right at that juncture, God sounds the final message that is to prepare a people for the second advent. Point number one of our lesson stresses the crisis over the worship of the Creator. Who should we worship? Science? Evolution? The power innate in man to lift him above and beyond his environment? This philosophy was verbalized by Nietzsche. It was enacted by Nazi Germany. A superior race was going to be bred. The fittest were going to be made fitter. And the fittest were going to survive. Religion was changed. What was innate, best, most powerful within man was going to be exploited, and there lay the secret of his ultimate final success. In light of materialism, science, falsely so called, genetic build-up, personality exploitation through propaganda, God was sending a message, worship him that made heaven and earth. There is nothing intrinsically valuable in the dust. It is only as God breathes into the dust the breath of life that man possesses any value. So point number one stresses the need for looking to the Creator, for focusing on the Creator, for worshiping the Creator in the circumstances of materialistic scientific evolution. Part number two, the crisis over the day of worship. No Creator, no Sabbath. It's possible to believe in the evolution of the sun, and then to give to the sun credit for all life and all energy on this planet. And it's possible then to set up a day in which we can think about the sun and rejoice at the material wealth and well-being that the sun, S-U-N, brings to us. And so there is a conflict growing in the last days, as the first and third angels' messages suggest, between the Sabbath of the Creator and the Sunday of the sun, that focuses within man the development of every trait and quality that is to be considered worthy. And so there will be in the last days a crisis over the day of worship, whether it's going to be the Lord's Day, Saturday, seventh day of the week, or the worship of the beast, the creature, the created thing and his image and his day, Baal, as we have seen earlier in this quarter's lessons. Part number three, worship in the setting of the everlasting gospel. Now, this word everlasting could be better translated, though more clumsily, as age-during. The same idea of enduring. It's the gospel that has survived
and succeeded
age by age.
The gospel was preached to Noah. The gospel was preached to Israel. The gospel was preached through Isaiah. The gospel was preached to Babylon through Daniel. The gospel was preached by the disciples. The gospel was preached by Luther. The gospel was preached by Wesley. The gospel is preached in the world today. It's the same gospel. It's the gospel that endures from age to age. It's the everlasting gospel. It's the indestructible gospel. It's the gospel and the only gospel that really succeeds. Now, the word gospel is interesting. It's literally God's spell. Spell is a formula, a formulary of words that are spoken to bring about certain results. We talk about witches casting a spell, which is partly fiction, partly supported by spiritualistic devilish power. God's spell consists of God's words containing God's power to accomplish God's ends. My word will not return unto me void, but it will accomplish the purpose whereunto I send it. So in every age, God's spell has been cast over men and women who accept and believe and trust and commit and have transformed them into the likeness of Christ and has preserved them. Now this gospel, preached in every previous age, is going to be preached in these last days as the antidote to materialistic evolution and science, falsely so called. Part number four, this preaching will lead to worship in difficult settings. Worship him that made, but don't worship the beast in his image. Now the beast in Revelation 13 is a symbol of Catholicism in the old world. The image is a symbol of Protestantism in the new. And Catholicism in the old world and Protestantism in the new are going to clasp hands and establish one day. That is the mark of the beast. The mark of Catholic authority in ecclesiastical affairs, the observance of Sunday. And as problems multiply on this planet, man, civilized man, is evidently going to select a religion as the final antidote to man's ills. And they will find in the religion of the papacy, the beast, a ready-made worldwide religion that fits in with and caters to the desires and propensities of man. And so the world will wonder after the beast. The world will say, who is like the beast? Who dare make war with him? Revelation 13:4. And the image made in the United States of the Roman hierarchy will stretch its hand across the gulf and take the hand of the papacy. And so, apostate Protestantism in the New World and Catholicism in the Old will clasp hands and then extend the hand of fellowship to paganism. And the threefold union of the beast, the false prophet, and the dragon will come about and will bring to pass the difficult circumstances mentioned in section 4. And these difficult circumstances will lead to persecution of the hated sect who worships the creature, the creator, and remembers the creator's holy day. They have the seal of God and they worship the creator. This group is described in Revelation 14 verse 12. Here are the patience of saints, a
According to Psalm 50 and verse 5, a saint is a person who has entered into a covenant relationship with God through the sacrifice of Calvary.
They have patiently endured their sainthood.
They have exhibited it by carefully keeping the law of God through the faith of Jesus. The law of God is His righteousness,
and the faith of Jesus is faith.
So they are saints who patiently endure and possess righteousness by faith. And with this righteousness by faith, in their state of sainthood, they face the decree that commands them to worship the beast in his image and to accept his mark. This is the final conflict between the law of God on the one hand and the law of man on the other. How long halt ye between two opinions? God be God, follow him. If Baal, then follow him. We've seen this dichotomy in the days of Cain and Abel, in the days of Abraham and those who failed, in the days of Israel at Jericho, in the days of Israel on Mount Carmel. How long do we halt between two opinions? And so heaven sends down an ultimatum. Fear God, glorify Him,
keep His Sabbath,
worship Him as the Creator,
or worship the beast
and His image and accept the mark of His authority in the observance of Sunday. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. Point number 5. An ultimate act of worship can be called separation.
Separation.
Wheat on one side, tares on the other. The harvester returns and separates. Some will cry, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. The others will look up and say, lo, this is our God, we have waited for him.
He will save us.
We will rejoice in His salvation. There is a
clear separation
between the wheat and the tares. They both grow together to the harvest, but the harvester is the one who separates them. And those who accept
the worship of God here on earth,
those who in actual practice become His saints, His disciples, will continue this worship in eternity.
This is section number 6. They will have a time from one Sabbath to another. We have seen this time
in creation.
Cain and Abel, the time of the Exodus, the time of Isaiah, the time of Christ.
There still is a time of worship. Every Sabbath, every new moon. There still is a place. They come up to Jerusalem. There's a time for worship, a place for worship, a person to worship. Jesus Christ, God the Father, the Holy Spirit, deity, are still the objects of worship. And all flesh that survives worship God. They ascribe honor and worship to God. As we think of the three angels' messages in worship, we've come right down to our time. Principles of worship are exactly the same as they've been in every age. The object of worship is exactly the same. Time, the place, the day, the method, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Let us therefore bring into our own principles these characteristics that mark out the true worshipper.